Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I will give you the optimism for the upcoming NFL draft. Yeah, everybody's starting fresh. Some teams have more picks than others. Some teams have higher picks than others. But everybody's going to get a chance to add some nice talent to their team this week. So whatever team you're a fan of, yeah, you're optimistic going into the draft. But as it says in the promo, we must sprinkle in a little reality. For that, I bring in a guy who knows what's real and what's not about the upcoming NFL draft. He's been doing it for years. One of the best in the business, at least as per the guys I've talked to over the last couple of years, decades here on the radio. The creator of the NFL Draft Bible, Rick Saratella, joins us here on CBS Sports Radio. How are you, Ricky?
Hey, Jody, always appreciate that intro. It's Christmas in April. What more can I say?
Yes, it is your week that you build up for each and every single year. Here's the first question I have for you. Because different people have different looks at the NFL draft and how it works, and I try and find a happy medium because I think some people overstate things and some people completely underestimate the same exact things. We can see what kind of a player is. We can watch film. We can go to the combine. We can get our stopwatches out. We can do all of those things. But then there's also the fact that it's a human being that we're talking about. And different people have different driving points to their personality and personality quirks and how motivated they are and the like. When you're putting together your big board and you're ranking all the players, how much of it is purely football skill level and the ability to do what they do between the lines on game day, and how much of it is everything else, personality, drive, ability to work with others, good teammate and the like? How do you balance those two things?
Well, I think just like a regular NFL organization, you have to take it case by case and player by player and weigh the factors that, you know, go into each position. And a guy like Baker Mayfield, who you hear, you know, upon his private workouts and visits with NFL teams, he was having an agent call the teams back and saying, hey, you know what, you need to bump me up to first class here now. You know, for me, if I'm looking at a franchise quarterback and he's calling me, telling me he needs to fly first class, a college kid, you know, that's going to drop him on my board a little bit. I don't know if he's a leader of men. You know, he's had some other off-the-field things, whereas, you know, an Antonio Callaway from Florida who, you know, quite honestly, I think he's the best wide receiver in this year's draft, but because of off-the-field issues, may go day two, may go day three. You know, if I'm an NFL team selecting a wide receiver, maybe I'm not so concerned about his off-the-field issues. I look at a guy like a Tyreek Hill from Kansas City, the success he had. Maybe I roll the dice on an Antonio Callaway in round two. So I think you got to take it, you know, case by case, player by player, even position by position, and weigh the different factors.
All right, then it's good that I ask you this question first. There was a reason I asked it first, because number one atop your big board is Josh Rosen of UCLA. And again, this is all secondhand information for me. I've never been around the kid. I've never been in a locker room when the kid was there, but I follow it closely, not as closely as you, but damn close. And there seem to be question marks attached to this young man, that he always believes he's the smartest guy in the room, that while football is important to him, it isn't necessarily his life. Add that to some questionable medicals because of concussions and other injuries and the like. You're a guy who sounds like you put a lot of stock into not just what you do on the football field, but your entire persona. How do you have Josh Rosen sitting on top of your board?
You know, Jody, I don't have any issues with this kid's character whatsoever. Has he worn a questionable hat? Has he said some strong opinions? Absolutely. And have I agreed with everything he said? Absolutely not. But at the end of the day, you know, what he said is really just, I don't think, being made a bigger deal than what it truly is. And, you know, you take a guy like him versus Baker Mayfield, I feel a lot more confident and a guy like Josh Rosen. And, yeah, he may rub guys the wrong way. He may not be for everybody. And certainly Jim Mora Jr.'s comments were very interesting on the NFL Network. But what if we flipped it around and criticized Jim Mora for the lack of success that he had at UCLA? Maybe he was maybe protecting his reputation and why UCLA didn't quite live up to the expectations. So when I take a look at Josh Rosen, his body of work, and so one thing he did say that I do agree with is, you know, people criticizing him for not maybe being as passionate as the other quarterbacks because his parents are so highly successful, because he comes from a successful family tree. Oh, well, he's got a couple concussions. Who's to say he loves the game? Another concussion, you know, maybe he doesn't love the game. But, you know, he said that might prove to be exact opposite, because I don't need the game of football, but because I love it so much, that's how much football means to him. So, you know, when I take a look at his track record and what he said, I think a lot of it has been more of a media build-up type of thing than really substance to meet the eye.
All right, how much stock do you put into what his teammates say? Because you mentioned Baker Mayfield, and, yeah, he's a cocky SOB. Nobody's going to argue that, but his teammates swear by him. They say they run to a wall for him, and that's kind of the opposite on Josh Rosen. I know his coach went on the record and specifically spoke out and questioned him some. His teammates have done it more as off-the-record sources, but he wasn't the most popular guy in that room. If you believe that certain people have agendas and others may not, how would you look at what teammates have to say about a quarterback they play with?
I mean, you have to question the source and who's reporting it and really go with what you've seen and heard. And, you know, unless a player or a teammate tells me that personally, I had a chance to be around Josh Rosen for a very short period of time at the NFL scouting combine. I think the way that this guy handled, you know, the media herd of over 100 plus media coming at him, he was there, he was poised, he was never rattled, not once. He answered every question with confidence and seemed very prepared. He wasn't scripted, he wasn't fake, and, you know, I think at the end of the day, you really have to trust your gut. And I think what's most important here is what we don't see. We talk about this every year, Jody, is those one-on-one meetings, those meetings behind closed doors, those private workouts, those 15 minutes at the combine in Indianapolis that we don't get to see with the chalk. So, you know, from that perspective, in terms of, you know, him being able to break down the UCLA playbook and front to back, he knows it like the back of his hand. And, you know, I've heard he's done very well behind closed doors.
Ricky Saratella of NFL Draft Bible, our guest here on CBS Sports Radio. There are others that think that Rosen is probably the most NFL-ready quarterback and can step right in. And like with any asset, the sooner it starts to pay dividends, the better, you would think. But I know very few have him ranked as the number one overall talented player in the draft. That he's a quarterback's probably going to go number one, could go one, two, three, four. We don't know how many in a row they're going to take, but they'll be pushed up because that's the want of the position in the NFL these days. You think he's a better player than both Bradley Chubb and Saquon Barkley?
Well, this is just, you know, a personal opinion here. I think Josh Rosen is going to make the most impact. And, yes, I do think he has the highest floor. And if it's me picking, yeah, Bradley Chubb, maybe not on the level of a Myles Garrett last year, but certainly a game changer and a playmaker. Saquon Barkley, you know, I still say Reggie Bush, and I'll admit this, was the highest-rated running back I had coming out of college. I would say that I and a million other draft Knicks were wrong on that, but I still have Reggie Bush, Ezekiel Elliott ahead of a Saquon Barkley. I think Barkley might be slightly above Leonard Fournette and Todd Gurley, but again, you weigh the value of the position. I still have a hard time selecting a running back number one overall, and I think, you know, ironically, Jody, Josh Rosen is probably going to be the third or maybe the fourth quarterback off the board. He has a great opportunity to slide because of the things that you just said, but I think it's misperception, deception.
Ricky Saratella, our guest here on CBS Sports Radio, talking NFL draft. All right, if running back is the most discounted position in the NFL over the last 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, how far back you think you need to go to draw the line and say, yes, that's when it became a lesser position? I would say the next most lessened position is linebacker. that because it's such a passing game now, you need DBs who can cover. Most teams play nickel, if not dime, on X amount of downs, 60% of downs in the National Football League, and linebackers come off the field. I don't like the fact that either running back or linebacker have been diminished, and we had two really good linebackers in this draft for me in Rashawn Evans and Roquan Smith. How far do they fall down because linebacker just isn't as important position as it used to be, unless you're playing a 3-4 and you're talking about a speed pass rushing outside linebacker?
No, you're exactly right, and I think, you know, again, this year's draft has some depth to it, so you can get those guys on day two in the middle of the rounds, but I love Rashawn Evans probably a lot more than other people do. I think he is the best linebacker in this year's draft, just from an overall talent perspective, the size, the speed, the instincts. I think he can do it all. He's a plug-and-play guy. Roquan Smith, from what I'm hearing, is a lock for Indianapolis at number six, but again, it is smokescreen season, so you have to take it with a grain of salt, and he could be the first linebacker off the board. And then you got a guy like Tremaine Edmonds from Virginia Tech, who, you know, 6'5", 250 pounds, he's out there running 4.5 40s, but then you have to factor in his football instincts, and is he a pure football player like the other two guys that we just mentioned? And of course, then you got a guy like Leighton Vander Esch from Boise State, who just shot out of a cannon at the combine and was, you know, a late declaree, a one-year wonder from Boise State, and had an excellent bowl game. He hit the draft cycle triple play between the bowl game, the combine, and his pro day, and he's now a first-round contender as well.
I'd love to see the fact that you came around on my guy, Mason Rudolph, who you have as a first-round grade ahead of Baker Mayfield, who we've already discussed, and you're not a big fan, and also Lamar Jackson. So you think he's got a chance to be the fourth quarterback off the board? Or, no, you just have him ranked fourth. Doesn't necessarily mean he's going to be drafted as high as your rankings go. What had you move him up? Because you and I have been discussing him all year, because I was a fan coming into the year. I haven't changed my opinion. It looks like you've upgraded your sum. Why?
I've done a lot more homework on Mason Rudolph since we last spoken, and I think that, you know, after circling back and reevaluating, and also a big part of this process, Jody, my 17th draft cycle covering it, I think a lot of it, too, over time, you especially at the quarterback position, you have to learn to respect those opinions who know more than you. And, you know, a lot of people that I speak to love what Mason Rudolph brings to the table, and I think, you know, he's one of those enigmas here in this year's draft, because people tend to either love him or hate him. But when you take a look at what he's able to do in terms of being a pocket passer, being able to throw the deep ball, being able to keep his accuracy when the pocket collapses, I mean, this is what a pocket passer quarterback at the next level looks like. And sure, is he not as mobile as some of these other top quarterbacks in this year's draft? Absolutely. You know, he's wearing those Drew Bledsoe dancing shoes there. But you know what? When you take a look at the other signal callers in the NFL and what they do and the ones that are successful, there's a lot of quarterbacks that carry the similar traits and characteristics of a Mason Rudolph.
Yeah, nobody ever said that Brady guy could move around too much, and he's exactly only the greatest of all time. The strength of this NFL draft, when all is said and done, will be blank. Fill in the blank.
Well, it's wide receiver, because, you know, it's not star-studded at the top. We might not even see a wide receiver in the first round this year. And when you take a look at the last two or three years, the first-round wide receivers have not made a big impact. But some of the other receivers on day two and day three have. And the depth of the wide receiver class, I think maybe that position may be not necessarily devalued, but I think teams might be a little bit more patient when selecting a wide receiver, just because they're so evenly rated. But I mean, the depth, I was doing last second tweaking of the big board today and looking at guys even on day three that have some starter characteristics, and I love this wide receiver class.
All right, one of the ones I love is Christian Kirk from Texas A&M. I know he's a quote-unquote slot wide receiver, but like I said, everybody in the NFL is running three, if not four, wide receiver sets on most downs. Hasn't the value of the slot wide receiver gone up? Isn't that enough to get Kirk at least high in the second round, if not bottom of the first?
No, I agree. I think, you know, the three wide, four wide receiver sets are so prevalent now that the slot receiver is as valuable as a boundary wide out and outside guy. And yeah, I think you have to decide, can Kirk play inside and outside? Absolutely. I think his best position is probably in the seam, but yeah, he's definitely one of the more explosive wide receivers in this year's draft and definitely a guy that can stretch the defense, no doubt about it.
All right, after Bradley Chubb, who is the guy who's going to get after the quarterback the most in this draft?
You know, this is one of the biggest mysteries in the draft in terms of who will be that second edge rusher off the board. And you take a look at a guy like Marcus Davenport from the University of Texas San Antonio, a smaller school caliber type of player, but a guy that, you know, really when you watch him on film, has the frame, the type of explosiveness living on the edge like a Jason Taylor, almost a Jason Taylor clone at times. But then you watch his film, and he's completely lost and doesn't know what he's doing and disappears. So, you know, the dangerous P-word potential, you know, the teams are going to see, you know, especially when the coaches begin to get involved in the evaluation process. When January rolls around, you start getting the coaches involved. They see a lump of clay like a Marcus Davenport, and they say, man, I can really coach this kid up. I can do wonders with a guy like this. Whereas Harold Landry from Boston College, I know he struggled with injuries this past season, but when you look at the full body of work, this guy's done nothing but get off after the quarterback. He's been a pass-rushing menace there in the ACC and just, you know, really has the skill set, the fundamental hand technique, the hand position, the understanding of how to win leverage. That's what Harold Landry brings to the table. So I think he's more of a polished type of pass rusher that can step in and make maybe a more of an immediate impact. But Marcus Davenport from UTSA is a fast riser here, probably goes in the top part of the first round.
Fair enough. Some people are of the belief that you can't draft a running back with the first overall, second overall pick in the draft. I've never subscribed to that theory, but for those who do and point to the third-round successes, fourth-round successes, guys who have had big years in the NFL and drafted in day two or day three, if we all agree Barkley is the highest-ranked running back, well, how do you rank the next two, three, four, five, and how quickly will they come off the board?
You know, I can see Barkley being the only running back, and wouldn't surprise me if we saw three running backs in the first round. But I think Darius Geis is a guy that's really not too far off from Leonard Fournette when you talk about a between the tackles, bruising running back, 225 pounds with speed and quickness, can cut it in the inside, cut it outside. And I think he's a guy, a late round. Maybe the Philadelphia Eagles, they'll have the luxury of selecting a running back. I know LeGarrette Blount is gone. How about plugging in the Darius Geis? I think he's the second guy off the board. And Ronald Jones from USC, he was that guy in consideration, and then he ran a poor 40-yard dash time and apparently turned off a lot of teams at the combine behind closed doors during the private meeting. So that would put, you know, probably Kerryon Johnson from Auburn in the mix. And Sony Michel is a guy I love from Georgia. He tends to fumble the ball every 50 or 60 carries, which is a very high rate. That might knock him back just a little bit. And Rashard Penny, I want to talk about him because the San Diego State running back, if you take a look now, this is the second year Vegas is doing those Vegas odds. They actually have Rashard Penny favored to come off the board before Ronald Jones right now. So I found that interesting. One last guy I want to sneak in that I think will be selected higher than people realize, North Carolina State, Nyheim Hines. Is he a feature back? Absolutely not. But this guy is so explosive. He's a game changer. He can bust open big-time plays, and I think because of that, he's probably a top 100. So
let me ask you about one that you left out, who I picked to win the Heisman Trophy, not this year, but the year before, last year, and he had his injury issues and everything else, and he had to share time because Sony Michel jumped up and was as good as he is. Where does Nick Chubb come off the board, and what kind of NFL back is he going to be?
He's the very next guy on my list, and I think that, you know, I love what Nick Chubb has done and brings to the table, and especially after the injury. However, I do think he did lose a little bit of explosiveness, and I watch him pre-injury, and then I watch him post-injury, and I just can't fall in love with him again as much as I did previously to the injury. So I think because of that, I'm a little bit more hesitant, but it wouldn't surprise me if he comes off the board ahead of some of the other guys that I mentioned. It would not surprise me whatsoever. I do think at the next level he's more of a rotational running back by committee. But then again, so are 26 of the 32 NFL teams.
All right, speaking of the teams, I had a Patriot caller earlier today, my buddy John, good caller, big Patriot fan, and he wanted to know where the Patriots are going to take a quarterback. If it's not in the first round, where they do have a couple of picks, second, third, or fourth round, that's where they've done their the next Tom Brady shopping the last 15 years, and they've kind of moved on from all of them, never needed anybody to step in for Mr. Brady. Where are they going to make the quarterback commitment again, because they need to, because they don't have a backup to Brady, and who is that type of quarterback?
Yeah, you know, Brady is like the modern-day Bill Walsh, where he just accumulates all these quarterbacks and trades them off, and you see them have success. Jimmy Garoppolo, I think, was a second-round pick. Jacoby Brissett was a fourth-round pick. They winded up getting, a second in exchange for him, and, you know, dealt off all their backup quarterbacks, and now they need another heir apparent to Tom Brady. And I'm looking straight at Kyle Lauletta from Richmond, very, very similar to a Jimmy Garoppolo, whereas he doesn't have the great arm strength, doesn't have the most powerful arm, but this kid, his accuracy is through the roof, his instincts is very high football IQ, and had a chance to talk with Kyle Lauletta on several occasions and had a chance to scout him in person. I think this is a quarterback who could eventually start at the next level. Now, you're looking at a kid that probably could go third, fourth, maybe even day three. There is a slight hamstring tear, from what I understand, that could knock him to the day three area range. But if I had a quarterback to build around from the middle of the rounds, it would be Kyle Lauletta from Richmond, and Mike White from Western Kentucky would not be too far behind.
Yeah, that was the next guy I was going to go to. Who do you like better? And you like them both about the same. Fair enough. All right, last question. Nothing like turning the clock ahead. We're going to pick all these players over Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, and then guess what? The stock watch starts again for 2019. I've heard some big things about Drew Lock, the quarterback at Missouri. Is he going to be as good as the bunch we have this year, slightly better, an unquestioned lock as the top quarterback, if not number one overall pick? And what have you done as far as research goes for Drew Lock for not this upcoming draft, but the one that's coming down the road some 370 days from now?
Yeah, well, it's funny you mentioned that, Jody, and we just did our 2019 preview on our latest podcast this week over at the NFL Draft Bible, and Drew Lock was one of the players that came up. And, you know, watching his spring game last week, I was very concerned with the new offensive coordinator. It was funny. It was supposed to be a lighthearted moment where they're talking to Drew Lock after his performance, had an outstanding spring game, and the sideline reporter was kind of, you know, talking to him, hey, you know, tell us what's going to go on in this play next, and, you know, hey, this is going to be a run right here. And then, in short, don't you know it, it's a pass. And then the next one, he's calling a pass, and don't you know it, it's a run. And then, you know, they kept asking him, and now he's panicking a little bit, throwing on the headsets, trying to hear the play come in from the sideline. I mean, my man went 0 for 3. So Drew Lock, I think, has a very talented skill set, and maybe I'm reading too far into it, but he's got to get a grip on that offense because he just had no idea what was coming. Couldn't read the defense, couldn't read the offense. So now, you know, I'm going to be keeping an eye on that. That's definitely a story to watch. But, yeah, we went through some of the top quarterbacks, Jarrett Stidham, Daniel Jones from Duke. There's a real sleeper for you next year who might rise up draft boards as well. So, you know, I think when you take a look at next year's quarterback class, people saying, hey, this year's quarterback group isn't as, you know, there's no Andrew Luck, there's no Carson Wentz in this year's quarterback class. Well, when you look ahead, you might have a better appreciation for this year's quarterback class because there is no clear-cut front-runner quarterback prospect, in my opinion.
All right, and a controversy 370 days out. Keep an eye on Missouri and their offense. Ricky, great stuff. Hey, have a great week. We appreciate all the contributions you gave with us. If we can, love to get you on again next week and do some reviewing and see who came out the winners and losers in this group.
Well, that would be fantastic. I always appreciate you having me on throughout the years, Jody. You're a first-class act, and, yeah, we're getting so close now. It's time for me to get nervous.
Well, yeah, you got it. And if the people want to get their hands on the Draft Bible, best way to do so?
NFLDraftBible.com. We've got everything there. And our draft coverage at NFL Draft Bible on the Twitterverse will be pumping a lot of content throughout the week.
Rick, great stuff. Always a pleasure, buddy. Thanks.
Thank you.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.